In May of 2020, the murder of George Floyd by police officer Derek Chauvin in Minneapolis triggered protests across the United States and what many hoped would be a turning point in the fight against police brutality in the country. And yet, nearly 3 years later, here we are again. On January 7th, 29-year-old Tyre Nichols was dragged out of his car, tased, and beaten by police for 3 full minutes during what was supposed to be a routine traffic stop in Memphis, Tennessee. He died of his injuries 3 days later. So can anything be done about the way Black people are policed in the United States? That's our conversation this week on Upfront. Here to discuss the killing of Tyre Nichols at the hands of police and the overall state of policing in the United States is Alex Vitale. He is the author of The End of Policing, and he's also coordinator of the Policing and Social Justice Project at Brooklyn College. We're also joined by Corey Pagase. He's a retired deputy inspector at New York City Police Department, and he's the author of the book Once a Cop. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me. The killing of Tyre Nichols at the hands of 5 Memphis police officers is just the latest example of brutality and the brutal treatment of Black and brown people at the hands of law enforcement in the United States. According to the Mapping Violence, Police Violence Project, police killed at least 1,176 people in the United States last year. That was a record high number. Now, this is nearly 3 years after George Floyd was murdered by Derek Chauvin in Minneapolis, Minnesota. What does that say that we're here again? Tyre Nichols, 29-year-old Black man, beaten to death by police. Corey, I'm going to start with you. When you see something like that, when you look at this, where we are at this moment, what do you think?
I think it's pretty sad that in the wake of George Floyd and other unarmed persons. So let me just say, in my estimation, whenever someone is unarmed and get killed by the police, all the culpability to me is on the police. Because when you have these engagements, the only person that has like $100,000 worth of training is the police. And they're supposed to be able to de-escalate. They're supposed to protect, serve, preserve property, all of that good stuff, and bring people in using the least force as possible. There's no way that anybody should be dying at the hands of police and they're unarmed, unless it's really a tragic accident where we know this was definitely intentional.
And Corey, when you see that this happens, despite the fact that he was unarmed and despite the fact that this was entirely preventable based on what we see on the video, what does that make you think about the bigger state of policing in the United States? Because this isn't a one-off. This isn't an extraordinary circumstance in some ways.
Well, listen, I've been saying it until I'm blue in the face, and I keep saying it. It's the police culture. That's quite obvious because we was under this misnomer, in Black America, that like it's all these racist white cops that's doing these things. Well, now here we see this 5 African-American police officers that killed an African-American male. So we can't scream this whole race thing. So there is this mentality in policing around America, in Black and brown communities, the police hunt, and in non-minority communities, they protect and serve. And we saw this on display by them illegally. It wasn't even a legal stop. That's coming from the police chief. I'm not making that up. You're not making that up. So they were out there hunting for whatever they was hunting for and ended up killing this young man for absolutely no reason.
Alex, what Corey just said is interesting to me. He said in certain neighborhoods they patrol or they police, in other neighborhoods they hunt. That's not an issue of individual character. That's not an issue of individual training. He's talking about a systemic issue here. How do you make sense of that kind of analysis?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that. I mean, you know, police reform didn't just start with the situation in Minneapolis. You know, it really begins after the Ferguson uprising. And the police in Memphis and the police in Minneapolis who killed George Floyd had all the new training, all the new use of force policies, new oversight, new rules around intervening. And it just didn't make any difference because I think the problem is deeper than just the culture of policing. It really goes to the mission of policing. And the fact is that these police officers were doing pretty much what they'd been told to do by political officials in Memphis. I mean, when you create a unit called Scorpion, and then you tell them to do whatever it takes to get the bad guys, that's going to look like hunting, and it's going to look like the use of extreme violence.
Is the idea of the bad guy in their mind simply vulnerable people, poor people, and, of course, Black people? How racialized is their our idea of what a bad person is or what policing looks like?
Well, this was almost certainly what we would call a pretextual stop, right? There was never any traffic safety issue. They were on a fishing expedition, hoping that they had gotten one of the bad guys. And as soon as there was any kind of hint of lack of cooperation or resistance, then they went into full-on violent suppression mode. And this is, you know, when we tell police that they are the only tool for keeping us safe and that they have a license to do whatever is needed to accomplish that, there are going to be horrible abuses like this.
Corey, the five Memphis police officers charged with second-degree murder in this case, they're all Black. Talk to me about how race plays in not just to what happened, which we've sort of talked about, but also to the response. I'm looking on social media, I'm hearing people say, this isn't racial, cops are Black. I'm hearing other people say they were only immediately fired because they were Black. Most white cops, when they kill people, get put on administrative leave. There's a way that race is being shot through this entire sort of conversation, all the way up to the police chief, who's also Black.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely disparity. You know, I was part of the LOA, Latinos Officers Association lawsuit that they won in the NYPD in the late 90s, $20 million lawsuit for racial discrimination for cops that was inside of the police department. So it's a track record around the country of how officers are treated. But so when we talk about these five Black police officers, you have this five Black, I mean, you have a Black police chief, Black lives don't really matter in the police world. I mean, you go to a precinct, let's say like in East New York, I'm assigned to the 7-5 precinct, and the commander or the sergeant or lieutenant is saying, when you go out here, this is what you do to these people. They're these people. They're not human beings. They don't look at the Black and brown community as normal people. And so that's how you develop that hunting mentality, because you know you're being pacified all the time. But the bigger picture,
does that come into your training as well, Corey? Like when you're in the actual training academy and you're taught, when you're a rookie, to what extent are you told to deal with this community in one way and that community in a different way?
Ironically, the training is good. I can't say that the training is bad. They're not giving you that. But when you get out of the training, and this is something that they also have to address, you have a rookie that comes in. It's like the George Floyd case. You see, you have a 20-year hairbag with rookies with 1 and 2 years. They came out. One had a few months on the job. He learned everything by the book, by the numbers. He's ready to go A, B, C, D. You got a 20-year guy teaching him that's going right to Z, kill. And that's something else that policing has to fix. Do you put a rookie with somebody with 10 years that's been involved in 2 or 3 shootings? This is how you want him to train the cops? Or the same one where the female shot the guy in Minneapolis, same thing, female training officer. She pushed a rookie out the way who's going in to grab the guy in the car, the young man, and she shoots him. So they have to figure out how you're going to train these rookies. But what I really think they need to do, we talk about defund, reallocate money in police. And I think we need to give this money to community-based organizations as like watchdogs. I think we need to have civilian patrol out there every night just to be the eyes and ears and have the same radio. When a call comes over, have the civilian patrol show up to the scene to ensure that the cops is doing everything right.
Alex, some people believe, many Black people certainly believe, I can say, that white officers have a different experience, that they get a different training, that they get different messages even than their Black colleagues. Talk to me a little bit about how white officers are socialized into policing Black neighborhoods and how they're taught to make sense of everything.
Well, all of this really calls into question this idea that, you know, we're going to fix this with some more mandated training, right? What happens on the street is not what they are trained to do. What happens in the street is driven by the mission and the way that that mission is interpreted by senior officers who instruct people, this is how policing is really done. You know, the cliche is, you know, the first day out of the academy, the instructing officer on the street says, forget everything you learned in the academy. This is how we really do things. And so we don't know always what's happening in the station houses, in the squad cars, the conversations between a senior officer and a junior officer. Is this at times racialized? Does this reproduce disparate treatment? I'm sure there are lots of important ways in which it does. And I think the strategy that we need to look at is really how do we solve community problems without involving the police as much as we possibly can.
So some people have said, particularly after the Ferguson uprisings in 2014, that the way to respond to this violence and the way to respond to police impropriety is not to get rid of the police, but to hold them more accountable, to have more access to what they're doing. Let's have body cameras, a lot of people said. We look at a case like Tyree Nichols, though, and when I'm watching the body camera, what I see is very different than what I hear. From what I hear, it's like, show me your hands, give me your hands. They're narrating the video as if there's somebody violent and somebody who's trying to grab a gun, somebody who's trying to hurt the police. But what I'm watching is someone who is defenseless getting beaten to death. We didn't see the death on camera, but we can see the beating. So I guess what I'm wondering is, to what extent is the body camera less effective than we imagined? And to what extent are police being trained, formally or informally, to fight the body camera with these sort of secret methods of pretending something else is happening? Corey, I'm going to start with you. Like, on the street in New York, a lot of times I see this anyway. I see cops say, stop resisting when nobody's resisting. I mean, to what extent are police fighting back against the body cameras by pretending a whole different story is happening?
I can guarantee you that's probably a union line. They were heavily against the body cameras. And so now, like you said, they're trying to narrate. You look at all the videos around America, catchphrases, put your hands behind your back, stop resisting. And you're looking at the video, like you said, Mark, the video is not, I mean, look at Tyree is on the ground, his hands behind his back, and the cops are screaming out, put your hands behind the back, stop resisting. He wasn't resisting, but it becomes a company line, and it's embedded in the police officers to keep saying this because someone told them, if you keep saying this, when we go to court, we could break this video down, and that would make sure that you're not guilty. So this is the line that they're being fed.
Alex Vitale, Corey Pagase, thank you for joining me on Upfront.
Thank you.
You bet.